Hello, I'm Lucy Harper, and welcome to Micropod, your small but perfectly formed podcast. This edition is all about science policy. Not quite how to win friends and influence people, but almost. Especially when, as Mark Henderson makes clear, those people don't necessarily have UK science at the forefront of their minds.
If you look at the makeup of the House of Commons, there's 650 MPs, there's, I think, 138 with a background in business, 90 professional politicians, 86 lawyers, 38 journalists and one scientist. It's a difficult position. Most of them do not have the background in this. They haven't really thought about it.
More from Mark a little later on. But our first guest is also at the forefront of fighting for better science policy. Imran Khan studied biology at Oxford, has a master's in science communication, and once worked as senior parliamentary researcher for Evan Harris, the former MP and Liberal Democrat science spokesman. Since 2010, Imran's been the director of CASE, the Campaign for Science and Engineering. CASE began life as Safe British Science, founded by academics in 1986 to protest about cuts to science during the Thatcher era. Originally funded by individuals, it's now financed by a number of organisations and campaigns on behalf of the UK's science base for policy and political change. I met Imran in their London office and began by asking him to define science policy.
I think there are two basic flavours. There's the kind that CASE does, which I think of as policy for science, and that's basically anything policy or political related that changes how science is governed and how science happens. So there's obvious things like the stuff that we work on, so how science is funded or to what extent it's funded, science education in schools and universities, things like immigration, which, you know, govern actually how, whether you can bring in people to the country to work on scientific projects and study here. And there's also issues that have been in the news recently, like open access, impact factors. There's really a whole range of issues there. But I think there's another type as well, which we don't work on as much, but it's just as important, which is science for policy, as opposed to policy for science. And I think of that as things which come out of science and research and evidence that change how other public policies work. And often these are quite public facing. So you get issues like embryology, so deciding, you know, the ethics or the public acceptance of research in embryos. Animal research is another one. Things like energy, you know, should we have nuclear power or should we switch to renewables? All of these things are influenced by the evidence that comes out of research. And science policy covers both of those two areas for me.
What are the priorities for CASE? What are some of the issues that you've been working on?
I think the number one priority for CASE as an organisation will always be science funding. That's our raison d'etre, and, you know, any kind of scientist or company or university will always tell you that is the thing they're most concerned about, actually having the wherewithal to pay for the research we all want to do and we all want to see happen. And it's fairly current at the moment in that, you know, in 2010, although we had the so-called science budget freeze, when you take into account inflation and also the fact there were, they froze resource spending, which is day-to-day spending on grants and things like that, but they actually gave a 50% cut to capital spending, which does include building new labs, but also includes replacing some fairly basic equipment. So we're actually in quite a difficult time at the moment. It's the first time that we've had cuts to the science budget in, you know, well over a decade, and I think people are really feeling the pinch. It's, you know, we see it as our role to raise awareness of the fact that's happening and campaign for it to be changed. And as we move towards the next election in 2015, it's going to become more and more of an issue. And even before then, there's going to be another spending review. But we want CASE and the rest of the science community to be prepared for when that happens, to be able to make the political and the economic case for why we need to increase investment in research. Other things we work on, you know, the big campaigns we've been working on have been immigration. You'll know that, you know, when the new government came in, they said they wanted to cut immigration from hundreds of thousands to tens of thousands, which when you ask people at the Home Office what that means, it means we want to get it to 99,000, because that's not hundreds of thousands. So it's a fairly, I think, blunt policy statement. But one of the things that we flagged up is, well, if you have this ambition, can't cut immigration from the EU, because we're in the European Union, there's free movement of people. So the only thing that's left for you to cut is economic immigration from outside the EU. And a huge proportion of that is actually people we really want to bring in because they're really valuable people to work in our universities and our companies, and often in a scientific or engineering context. So we've been fighting a big campaign to make sure that when the Home Office brings in new regulations on immigration, they really pay attention to what we as a science community need. And I think by and large we've been successful in that. So we've had a few policy successes, and they've given us a few policy changes to make it easier for us.
I have a hunch, and it is only that scientists seem to be taking more of an interest in science policy. Mm. Do
Do you think that hunch is right? And if so, what do you think's contributing to that shift? And also, another question, do you think the same is true in reverse? Do you think more politicians are becoming interested in science?
I think the hunch is right. I mean, I've only been at Case for 2.5 years. I've been working in science policy for a bit before that. But even during the past few years, I've definitely noticed more and more people kind of coming up to us and saying, you know, I'd like to get involved in policy. I'd like to kind of have my voice heard in these debates. How can I go about it? And I think partly it's just been what's on the policy landscape. You know, we had a general election fought in 2010 where there actually were lots of people saying, well, what's the scientific element to this? You know, Case organised a debate and there were two other debates as well. We had the three science spokespeople from the major political parties. They came and spoke to scientists and engineers about what they wanted in terms of science policies. We've had things come out like, you know, like the impact agenda, like open access, like funding, like immigration, which actually hit working scientists day to day. You know, that impacts what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I think because of those changes, people have actually, you know, switched on and said, well, actually, if this isn't working now with the way I want it to, I need to get involved and make a difference. So I think that's one side of it. The other, and it sounds a bit of a cliched answer, but I really think social media helps, because, you know, before it was so easy to just start up a blog or get on Twitter or whatever else. If you had interesting thoughts about policy and, you know, all the people around you didn't, you probably thought you were in a minority of one in caring about these issues and wanting to do something. Whereas now you can just, you know, look up any interest you want and find people who care about it and then want to talk about it as well. And in the past year or so, you've had things like, you know, Mark Kennison's book, The Geek Manifesto, come out, which talks a lot about the fact that people are just more connected, so it's much easier to mobilise people and recognise that there are lots of shared interests out there.
What can organisations like ESFAN and its members do to help influence science policy?
Well, part of what you can do is, you know, really simple, just talk to each other. Often I think science policy suffers from the fact that we're not completely sure what the issues are. So for instance, you know, we did loads of work in immigration trying to talk to the Home Office about what was required in the new policies to make sure they worked with the science and engineering community. And the single thing we kept on stumbling upon is, well, how do we know this is actually true? How do we know that the reforms that Home Office is providing for are the reforms that we need? And you can ask, you know, as many people as you like, but what tended to happen is that we'd ask for something and then a few weeks later we'd hear of another case study where this nightmare situation had happened and, you know, some amazing researcher from China couldn't get in. So I think it's really key that we share the issues with each other, and when there are problems with how science is being governed, that we're able to make sure that politicians and policymakers can hear about them. Talk to the media as well. Like, you know, we talk about the fact that we don't get, you know, scientists don't get involved in politics. I think they also don't get involved in some other areas of public life. And by that, I don't mean go and be the next Brian Cox, as much as, you know, that's admirable. But, you know, if you see an issue in the newspaper or even in, you know, the Times Higher or Research Fortnight, which you disagree with or you agree with, you know, write them a letter. I think other people in society are much better at being proactively engaging in that kind of way. And I think we suffer as a result and we need to up our game. But when it comes to politics, do you engage with politicians? You know, the number one piece of advice I would give to anyone when it comes to science policy or science politics is just invite your MP around to your university or to your lab. Because we can moan and complain about the fact that most politicians and MPs don't have a science background. But the flip side of that is, well, if they don't have a science background, why should they care about science unless we go out there and tell them why? They need to know about the kind of research we're doing. They need to know about challenges we face. And they need to know about what we can contribute to their work. You know, ultimately, they're in a system where they've got to get elected every 5 years. And if they think that, you know, locally, there are X number of scientists who might make the difference between them coming first or second, they will pay attention to you.
Good advice. Thank you. In terms of the relationship between science policy and party politics, do you think the rising profile of science policy with scientists and potentially science with parliamentarians is related to party politics at all?
That's really tricky. I think at the moment it's not hugely. Right now there's not much difference between the parties in terms of how they approach science policy. So, I mean, for instance, if you look at the Labour shadow science minister, who's Chion Wura, she, you know, she was an electrical engineer originally, and she's now their spokesman on science and research issues. I think she's great. You know, she said some really interesting things about science policy. She's really interested in the issues. But because Labour are still in the process of making their own wider policy, it means they don't have that much definitive to say yet on science policies. For instance, you know, when it comes to funding, they haven't said what their position on science funding would be in terms of should there be more investment or do there need to be cutbacks, which means it's difficult for them to engage with the government on the fact that the government have cut science. So I think there's a problem there in that there's not enough diverse policies out there for there really to be a proper party political debate about where we want science to be. However, that might be starting to change. We just saw Julian Huppert, who's the kind of de facto Lib Dem science spokesman, brought out a series of proposed policies for the Lib Dems. And it's got things like, you know, setting up a new grand challenge for international development, saying they want to have a 3% above inflation year-on-year rise in science funding. And all this has got to be yet to be adopted by the Lib Dems. But, you know, if that happens, then you might actually see some, well, for a start, you'd see some interesting wrangling within the coalition, given that the Lib Dems are in government. But it might force the other parties, you know, I include Conservatives, Labour, the Greens, SNP, to all talk about, well, what's their particular vision for where science is going? And I think that's probably quite healthy.
Imran Khan from CASE, the Campaign for Science and Engineering. And we wish Imran good luck in his new role as Chief Executive of the British Science Association, which he takes up in April. Imran mentioned the book The Geek Manifesto as a positive example of increasing interest in science policy. Mark Henderson, head of communications at the Wellcome Trust and former science editor of The Times, is its author.
It's a book that I really wanted to write because I thought it was important. And it's about the disconnect, I think, between science and politics and the relationship between those two very different fields. And what it tries to do is to explore why perhaps they don't get out of one another as much as they should and could, and how that actually leads to outcomes that are neither best for science nor best actually for politics and politicians and the country and wider society. I think there's a lot more that each could contribute to the other.
So what was your inspiration to write the book in the first place?
Well, it's something that really grew out of what I observed while reporting science for many years at The Times, and really noticing that when politicians come to handle science, come to manage science, they often do it rather badly, whether it's issues such as the regulation of medical research, where we have had a lot of well-intentioned legislation that has actually ended up causing great bureaucracy that makes it very difficult sometimes to do clinical trials, or whether it's an issue like the immigration cap. You see a lack of experience of science and understanding of science at the highest level in politics. That means not through any great hostility, but simply through ignorance in the totally non-pejorative sense of just not knowing. You see science mishandled, and I think that's a shame. But the other thing is that you also see that there's very little appreciation among politicians of actually how science as a method, how science as an approach to knowledge, could actually lead to better policy. You don't see evidence being handled often particularly well, and that leads often to difficulties such as we saw over drugs policy that culminated with the sacking of Professor David Nutt. But worst of all, in many ways, you don't see the tools of science being applied to social issues that we would really like to be able to address at a political level. So, for example, if we want to know what the best way to teach kids to read is, then there are approaches from science that are used in other branches of science that can really help there. The randomised controlled trial, that kind of thing. Politicians don't think that way enough, and I think not enough of them have the background and the understanding of science that and appreciation of science that would really help them, I think, to do their jobs more effectively.
One blurb I've read about your book explains that in the Geek Manifesto, Mark Henderson explains why and how we need to entrench scientific thinking more deeply into every aspect of our society. A new movement is gathering. Let's turn it into a force our leaders cannot ignore. Now, that's quite strong language, and I noticed when I was reading the book myself that the language that you use is pretty strong. Was that a deliberate decision, or was it something that was just an artifact of your passion for the subject?
I think it's a book that has to be written passionately, or there's no point in doing it, because as that quote just suggested, I think one of the important aspects of the book is not just to whinge about how bad things are, but actually to start suggesting some approaches that people who care about these issues can start to take in order to improve things. And I mean, it's my great belief that politicians don't, by and large, in this country, mishandle science or fail to appreciate it because they're anti-science. They're not, by and large, hostile to science. They just haven't thought about it. If you look at the makeup of the House of Commons, there's 650 MPs. There's, I think, 138 with a background in business, 90 professional politicians, 86 lawyers, 38 journalists and one scientist. It's a difficult position. Most of them do not have the background in this. They haven't really thought about it. And one of the reasons that they haven't thought about it is there's been very little pressure and incentive for them to think about it. People who care about science have not historically been particularly good at making their views known to their MPs in a timely and effective way. The broadest community of people who care about science hasn't been good at forcing it onto the political agenda.
Why do you think that is?
We have had a tendency, as with the communication of science, although that is helpfully starting to change, seen anything other than actually doing research as something that's almost not the core business and not the core activity. We can get very caught up in certain pursuits the day-to-day and not push it out. I think there's also a feeling that somehow people aren't going to be interested in science, that politicians are a lost cause. I really don't think they are, and I'm actually very optimistic about the possibilities of changing this, because I really think that as politicians sort of start to engage with science a bit more, they'll start to actually see that there is a lot more that they could do. There's a lot more they could use from science in their jobs to do their jobs better. And they could help to create the circumstances that science needs in which to succeed.
I noticed there's been a campaign for people to send a copy of the book to their local MP. Can you explain a bit more about the rationale behind your thinking of starting that campaign, or at least encouraging it?
Well, it wasn't actually started by me. That was one of the great things about it in many ways. So I talk in the book about an online tool called Pledge Bank, where people can pledge to do something if a certain number of people do it as well. I talked about it in the context of complaining about dodgy alternative medical practices and so on. But it's something that a guy called Dave Watts, who read the book and really enjoyed it, thought, right, let's try and get a copy to every MP. And he set up this pledge. And before long had 40 or 50 people who'd signed up, and then my publisher agreed, when I brought it to their attention, to match all of those pledges. So to get it to every MP, we'd have to make 325, which we made, and it's great. And I don't think for a second that every MP is going to start rushing to read it, but some of them will, and some of their staffers will. And I've already had some interesting correspondence from some MPs who've said, you know, actually, these are very interesting points that I need to, and I do need to make more of an effort. Also, just the very act of being sent a book like this by one of your constituents sort of makes it clear to the MP, you know what, there's people who care about this sort of thing, who vote. And that's quite an important message.
I've done the pledge.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think something else that has had an impact has been the sort of realisation that, you know what, if we don't make a noise about some of these issues, nobody's really going to do it for us. And you saw that with the Science is Vital campaign during the last spending review, and you saw it with the support that Simon Singh got in his libel case. You see it in people meeting up at Skeptics in the Pub and that kind of thing. There are a lot of opportunities now to get involved, and I think that really helps. From the academic perspective, something that I think could help, actually, if it's done the right way to drive this further, is actually the impact agenda and the fact that increasingly researchers are having to show what their work achieves. And that impact doesn't need to be economic, it could be policy impact. And I think universities have a long way to go yet in ensuring that policy-relevant research does have policy impact.
How do you think organisations like ESFAN can help?
Membership societies and learned societies have a very important role to play here, largely through support. And I think they can help their members to know how they might be able to start out and set about either lobbying effectively or getting in touch with other organisations that can help to do that. At the Wellcome Trust, we've recently put together a little one-page simple guide as to how to respond to a public consultation, for example. That's the kind of document that actually can be really useful to people.
Mark Henderson there from the Wellcome Trust and author of the Geek Manifesto. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our Science Policy Micropod. I'm Lucy Harper, and I'll see you again soon.